Hey all, want to welcome you to this week's episode of the weekly Morningstar Men's Podcast. Today we begin a new two-part series. It's about communication. It's dedicated specifically to people who either want to communicate verbally or communicate in writing, and they want to communicate with a purpose, to accomplish something. So perhaps we're talking about someone who's a leader in an organization, a leader in a family, a leader in the church, perhaps. We're looking at anyone who wants to share ideas and wants to do it more effectively. Incidentally, that should probably be most of us. We're going to look at some of the tips, some of the ideas that will help us to do that. We're going to begin today with what I'll call communications theory, the basic concepts of how communication takes place and what pre-qualifies us to communicate a message. So I hope you'll find this to be very instructive. This, incidentally, is not something only for people who are going to communicate to get paid to do so. This is for anyone who wants to share ideas. So if you're listening, chances are this material can be adapted to the life that you live now and the challenges that you face when you want to share ideas with others. See you again next week. So about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I was doing some travel, had some time to reflect and evaluate, and I was asking a question about why it was so difficult to find and engage leaders, study group leaders, teachers, anybody who was going to be committed to investing some of their time and their energy in presenting ideas to other people. And the reason I was asking the question is actually because, Scott, don't get so distracted. Okay, I'll walk you through how to be on what page. You're sitting there like a lost deer. Just step away from the papers. We'll get to that. Okay? And so I'm sure most of you know that it wasn't really part of my plan from several years ago to actually be here this morning. And so, again, about a year ago, I'm asking this question: what does it take to develop a group, a team of people who can step into the responsibility of encouraging, of teaching, of leading men? People, not just men, but people in general. And the question that I asked was, is it a confidence thing? Is it a calling thing? Or is it simply a skills thing? Now, do people doubt their skills? Do people not sense a call to do this? Or do they sense a call but lack the confidence? Well, I cannot fill in the call part. But maybe I can help with the confidence, and maybe I can help with the skill. And so for the next 2 weeks, this week and next week, we're going to look at some ideas. There's far too many. Again, I kind of went a little over and above what I should have. So there's more ideas here than we're really going to get to. But I wanted to give you a few things that you can think about if you're lacking confidence or if you're lacking skill that might help you. And already some of you are thinking, well, why do I need to be here then? Well, the reality is that all great leaders have to communicate. It's part of what they do. So whether you lead in an organization, or whether you lead in a church, or whether you even aspire to, here's a novel thought, leading your family, even if you aspire just to leading your family, you need to excel at communication. And if you doubt that, just put it to the test this way. Have you ever tried to communicate something important to your wife or to your children, and it not gone well? And if that's so, do you ask yourself why? Or do you just assign it to the fact that, well, it was a male-female thing, and therefore that's why it didn't go well? See, no matter where you are, there are reasons why it would be helpful to excel at communication. Certainly in a church that's growing, we need people who can step into the responsibility of helping other people, leading other people. We'd call it in a church setting, discipling other people. But how many people are actually confident at doing that? And who does the work of making people confident at that? So maybe for 2 weeks, we'll do a little bit of work towards building your confidence. All right, so the first thing And we're just going to look at a few pre-qualifiers. So here's the first one, and we're on the first side of the first page. You can tell it's the first page because it says week one. Don't speak, don't write, until you know that you have something to say. Now that really sounds unprofound, doesn't it? But maybe the best way to describe it is this. The world is filled with noise. Do you really feel that the world needs more noise? Do you want to contribute to the world's noise? Or do you feel that what you have to say is something that is so important that it deserves to be said, that it needs to be said? So that's the first pre-qualifier. Do you have an idea that desperately needs to be communicated? Or are you just talking, and we're going to get into pre-qualifying the messenger in a moment. Right now we're pre-qualifying the idea. And here's the simplest way to say it. Do you have something important to say, or do you have a unique way of saying it? So there are certain things that need to be said fresh in every generation. There are what we'd call timeless principles, timeless truths. They need to be recommunicated in every generation. Now here's the amazing thing, and most people don't really stop to think about this. We live at the first time in history when voice could be recorded and played back. So up until this time, the written word could be preserved, but the verbal, the oral word, could not be preserved. But now it can be captured and it can be played back. So we can hear the way great communicators from Churchill, maybe Roosevelt, people of that era, we can hear the way they communicated to people. But 1,000 years ago, that wasn't possible. And so the one question you might have is, well, if it's been said already, if it's been written about already, why do I need to say it again? Doesn't that just contribute to the noise? To which you have to ask the question, well, then why does God assign prophets in each generation? Why does God send new messengers in each generation? And we're going to connect it in a minute to pre-qualifying you as the messenger, but here's the reality. Even a timeless message needs a current presenter who understands the culture and the setting and can communicate the message in a fresh way that's relevant to the generation that they're speaking to. So the same thing that appealed to my father may not appeal to my grandson. It's the same truth, but it might need to be communicated in a different way. So what's the message that you have to communicate? And to some of you, I'm speaking pointedly, directly, about something that you feel perhaps a tug to say. You have a message to say. But do you have a way to say it that really matters? So a good communicator, here's how we qualify this, a good communicator either has a great idea to communicate or they have a compelling way to communicate it that breaks through the chatter. But all great communicators have both. They have not only a great idea, but they have a unique way of delivering it that captures people's attention and allows it to be more than noise to them. All right, so that's the first thing. Now we'll look at timing. And we'll look at the quality of the message. So I've divided this into three types of messages. There are urgent messages. We're probably on the... We're still on the first page. Look at that. There are urgent messages. There are important messages. And then there are significant messages. And so I used a few examples. And you might think, well, these are stupid examples. Fair enough. They're stupid examples. So here's the first message. The building's on fire. What's the nature of that message? Urgent, important, or significant?
Where's the fire at?
All right, the building is on fire and you are in it. It's urgent, right? Not only that, will it do to hold that message? Will it do for you to say, you know, maybe there's a better way for me to express that. If I go home tonight and prepare a better presentation, perhaps I can tell people the building is on fire tomorrow. No, there are certain messages that need to be communicated, and they need to be communicated now. What's the nature of your message? Is it one that is so timely, so valuable, so necessary that it not only needs to be communicated, but it needs to be communicated now? Because here is the rationale that a lot of people use. We can turn over to the back side of your first page. About two-thirds of the way down, it says, everyone must begin. You will never be totally ready. How many of you are delaying on doing something because you're not sure if you're quite confident enough, quite prepared enough, you're not quite sure if you have the right skills in order to begin to lead something? If you do not cringe in one way or another at the product you first deliver, then you have waited too long. Your product may actually be irrelevant, but if you wait until all the facets of development, production, and delivery are perfect. That's from the guy who founded LinkedIn. So think about that in relationship to the the industry that he's in. It's technology related. And what he's saying is that if you wait until you have all the pieces in place before you begin, here's what happens. You obsess over details that may not be important, and at the same time, while you think you are perfecting something, you may be neglecting things that need to be dealt with because the product hasn't been proofed in the real market. In other words, you're not going to know if your message needs to be tweaked in a certain way until you put the message out and receive some pushback on it. Until people come up to you and have questions and say, well, what about this? Or how does what you're saying fit with this other thing? If you wait until you are perfectly prepared and totally confident, you will wait forever. And if it's an urgent message or an important message, you may lose the window of opportunity that would have helped the most people with it. All right, so what's an important message? Important messages don't have the urgency of it has to be communicated now, but they do have an element of if we don't communicate this, there's negative consequences that could occur, or positive consequences that we won't reap. But the timing factor allows you to give a little bit more thought to how it can best be done. So let's look at timing. Think about a time when you rushed into a conversation with your wife or your children. You had a message on your mind, your heart, you wanted to say it, and you knew there was a right time, but you were just a little bit exuberant about the message that you had to deliver, and you rushed the timing. What happens? Nobody but me has ever been in this situation. Right message, wrong time.
They're not ready to hear it.
Either they are not ready to hear it, or the background and the setting is not right. Have you ever had that? Here's one that everyone can relate to. Has some thought come to mind and you felt you needed to communicate this with your mate to help her understand how you saw things differently? And you had the luxury of a several-hour car ride in which to have the conversation. I mean, after all, it was a captive audience. What could go wrong?
Don't forget, it's a several-hour car ride.
Exactly, right? Have you ever been in that situation? I have to tell you, from personal experience, that there's things that we've talked about here, that there's things that I've talked about in other settings, where I just felt the urgency to deliver the message, and maybe the timing was wrong. And if the timing is wrong, you can get the thing off your chest, so to speak. You can deliver the important message and think you've checked it off your to-do list. Well, I did my part. But if you didn't wait until the timing was right, what was the point? Because if your point was to change minds, to change thinking, to change behaviors, but you deliver prematurely, that doesn't occur. So one of the skills that I believe every great communicator acquires is poise. And poise is the ability to wait until the time is right. Now what about a significant message? And you would think that the two are the same, right? Important and significant are the same. But they're not necessarily the same. So let's take a look at this in a business setting so it's easier to see. So in a business setting, an important message might be, and I have a similar example there, we haven't met our sales quotas for the last 3 months. Go ahead, Jim.
In the corporate setting, an urgent message is where she walks in the room, you're in the boardroom with everybody else, you're at the head of the table, she breaks in, comes over, whispers in your ear. That's an urgent message. You need to do this now. before you make this deal. The important message is, as soon as you exit, she's sitting at her desk right there and says, Mr. Singer, I need to speak with you a moment. She gives you the message there. Significant message, go to your desk, it's written down, it's like, hey, Mr. Singer, don't forget to call your wife. She wants a date, whatever it is. The distance between...
I know that call never took place.
34 years ago, we did, but...
Did you say 40 years ago?
Maybe.
Okay.
Whatever. You see what I'm saying? One is... The, where you place it is...
Did everybody hear that? Did everybody hear what he said? Everybody understand that? That's a really good description of it. How soon does it need to be delivered? But here's the thing. There are a lot of important messages that are floating around that are only important in the context in which they're delivered. But here's the thing. Like I said, suppose that the message that you need to deliver, which we'll call an important message, is we haven't met our sales quotas for the last 3 months. We need to meet our sales quotas on a monthly basis because all of our budgeting projections for the year are based on meeting year or monthly sales quotas. We're going to be in deep trouble if we don't turn this around. That's an important message. Can it delay a day to be communicated in a more favorable way? Yes. Can it delay 3 years to be communicated? No. Now here is the subtle trap. An important message is only important if that business is important. See, if the scope and the nature and the contribution of that business really isn't that significant, then it's an important message that is only important in the context in which it's being delivered. A significant message stands the test of time. It matters in all contexts. The subtle trap of a significant message is exactly what Jim said. It'll wait. And because significant messages generally can wait to be delivered, sometimes we delay in the delivering because often a significant message is also a very challenging message to deliver. And we're going to look at some of these significant messages that can be very challenging to deliver. Hopefully we'll get to that today.
I think quite often we don't deliver the message until it is urgent to us. I was sitting here thinking... The toilet paper being out in the bathroom isn't really important to me until I'm the one sitting on the toilet. And then it's urgent and we got a family emergency. But it's true. Until it impacts me, am I really willing to do something about it?
Then you find out if your family really does listen.
It certainly wasn't to me when I walked in there.
So, the other challenge to a significant message is because it can keep, because we have time to prepare for it, and because it is actually of greater consequence than either the important or the urgent message, the way in which we deliver it matters the most. And so a person lacking poise is probably going to defer on delivering that message because they know what's at stake and they know how hard it can be to get something right so that people will actually listen and receive it. All right. Let me take you to one verse of Scripture. It's not written in your notes, so maybe you want to turn there. Psalm 37. Thank you, Scott. You probably want to write this down. We're not going to use a lot of scripture for the next 2 weeks because we're talking, I guess, communication theory. But this is important. Psalm 37, verse 30 and 31. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom. His tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart. Now we're going to use this as a guiding principle when we look at pre-qualifying the messenger. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom. His tongue speaks justice. The law of God is on his heart. The last part of that second verse is, his steps do not slip. But I want to focus on the first three components. So what's he offering there? The mouth of the righteous offers wisdom. What's he offering? Wisdom. Wisdom is more timeless. It is a significant message. When do you need to be prepared to deliver wisdom? Hopefully before it's needed, certainly. but all the time as well, because we never know when the next opportunity to deliver important wisdom comes. And his tongue speaks justice.
What verse did you say, Glenn? I'm sorry.
30 and 31. So he speaks righteousness, he utters wisdom, his tongue speaks justice. Where does this all come from? The answer's in the second verse there. The law of God is in his heart. Let's pre-qualify why we want to talk. So remember, we pre-qualified the message. Do you have something that is important to say, or do you have a compelling way to say it? Let me back up and critique that again from a different angle. We've all heard important material delivered in bad ways. Have you ever sat through a presentation? Maybe it was a sermon. And you were excited because you learned what was going to be talked about. 5 minutes into the presentation, you're thinking, well, no, what about this? Or they didn't say anything about that. Or this sounds like something I've heard 1,000 times before. Have you ever been excited about what you were going to hear, anticipated hearing something great, and been let down by the fact that it turned out not to deliver on what you'd hoped it would? How many times do you give yourself permission to be that vulnerable before you shut down? Do you understand what I'm saying? What happens a lot of times is, listen to me, you, if you are going to be a great communicator, have a trust. You have been entrusted with the trust of other people. You can inoculate people to ideas instead of helping them to understand it. Do you know what I mean by that? What's an inoculation? It's a little of something that's given to someone in the way of something that helps them to build up a resistance so that they never catch the full thing. When you're delivering important principles or ideas, you never want to inoculate people because you have a great idea, but a lame delivery. And in the process of delivering something in a bad way, you turn people off to the opportunity to ever hear the truth in a good way. And we know people that have been inoculated to the gospel of Christ because it's been delivered poorly. How much more difficult is it to break through to someone who has been inoculated than someone who's never caught the disease? You understand what I'm saying? So we have a trust. The skill that you bring to this does matter. All right, let's now pre-qualify you as a messenger. So I've sorted this out into 4 different categories of people. The first one is, and it's on the second page, the back side of your first page, I believe that I have an idea that needs to be delivered. I have something powerful that needs to be said. I see there is a need there, and we'll talk about what those needs could be in a few minutes. I see that there is a need there. This needs to be said. So when we look at the recent series that we did about fathering, I just felt there was a need for that. Now, I'm certainly not the only one that's seen there is a need, but I felt there was a need for that here. And so in this market, to this group of people, I felt this is a need that needs to be addressed. And so in that sense, my compelling reason for speaking was I felt that I was the ambassador of the idea. Now, I'm not saying I'm the only ambassador of the idea. I'm not even saying I'm the best ambassador of that idea. But I felt that I had a personal responsibility. The idea deserved a credible telling. And that was my motivation. Another valid reason for becoming a communicator is you sense a call. And the two can overlap. And a call is not only always something spiritual. So let's take it into the business realm. You step into a responsibility, you have a role, somebody picks up the phone and they say, hey, I need you to deliver these sales projections for the next 3 months. It's your job to present this to the board next month. Are you going to be ready? All right, that's a call. It's not quite a call in the spiritual sense, but it is a call and you need to be ready. But on a deeper and more serious level, do you sense that God has called you to do something? Because every message is going to get pushback. Now let's think about the prophets. Right? Go ahead, Jim. Are you bubbling to say something?
It's like an ambassador. I mean, I don't know if we've all watched it, but you know, you watch politics happen. When you put an ambassador in place, he's never visited a country. He has no idea where he's going. He has no idea what he's going to do when he gets there. But you just made an ambassador for your country in a foreign land. Are you nuts? What were you thinking? It's not something new. My dad was a salesman for many years. He had something called product knowledge. You could sell something you didn't know about. It's your first day on the job. There's 100 people standing right there. Go teach them about this product. I can't. I don't even know the product. You know what I mean? So he would bring home these pamphlets and books and he would read about the product that he had to now sell. And I think oftentimes, we don't really know the product that we're trying to sell. You know what I mean? I just think that's oftentimes how, for us, you know, I can be excited and I'm a new believer and I want to tell everybody, you know what I mean? Be careful just going right out there and deciding to, you know, hey, you need to. Because you can inoculate people pretty quickly that way.
I love something he said that's really important that we all need to hear. He said, you can be excited. You can almost pick this up, whether it's in watching political presentations or whether it's in listening to spiritual presentations. The greater the level of excitement at the beginning of the presentation, it's almost a guarantee that there's less content. Because people who don't have depth of understanding of the content are usually all fluffy and bubbly and excited.
There's no fear.
Well, not only is there no fear, but there's nothing to say. So they have to get excited about the nothing that they're about to say. And they're hoping that they can bluff you into being excited about the nothing that they have to say, because deep down inside they're actually a little bit fearful because they know that they don't have as much to say. The amazing thing is that the more understanding you have about what you're going to say, the less fluff you have to have when you say it. So if you look at it, how many of you are familiar with TED Talks, watch them from time to time? Okay. You'll notice that most great TED presenters are pretty even keeled. They can tell great stories, they introduce humor at the right time, but they never come on stage all happy, slapping their hands together, all that stuff. They're just even straightforward. Why? Because when you know what you have to say, you don't. The message delivers the excitement. You don't have to. Thank you. That may not be the direction you wanted to take that idea, but I felt that was important to say.
I have a company at work that every morning they get together and they listen to music really loud and they clap and they jump and they sing and they jump the jacks together and then they go out and they sell Verizon phone cards. And it made me think of all of us who are on the outside. I do commercial building maintenance, and so they're one of the tenants. We all laugh and say, you know, we need to be praying for those people. They have no idea what they're getting into. They have interviews constantly coming in, and they get people hyped up, and you go out and you try to sell gift cards.
Could I guess that when you come back next week, there's new faces in the room?
Oh, always. Every day.
Right. So they really are like lambs being led to the slaughter. They have no idea that when they go out there, they're not going to be as successful as they've been led to believe that they're going to be. But incidentally, to the people that are being sold on these cards, you can see right through it.
Oh yeah.
That's really a great way to illustrate it. People can see through emotional hype. Just be real. It counts for a lot. And incidentally, this pre-qualifies the message. If you feel that you need to bring the excitement, then the message isn't ready yet. Okay, the next one. So the first one was, you feel that you're an ambassador for this, a champion for this message, this idea. It's important and it needs to be said, and nobody else is saying it, so you're going to take the responsibility to say it. And that could just be in a small group. Maybe you've got four or five guys that you're going to meet with, or maybe a few couples, and they need to hear this. And you say, hey, let's get together and study this. I've been studying this. I think this is important. I've experienced transformation in my own life because of this. Let's get together and talk about this. So it doesn't need to be big. The next one, you sense a call to it. And when you look at the calls of the prophets, many times the prophets were called to serve because before they were given the message. You might be called before you know exactly what you're going to say, and God is going to test you to see, are you willing to step into the call? And then you'll be given the message. And sometimes I think, especially when you look at the lives of some of the prophets as recorded in the Bible, if they had known the message that they were going to be given to say, they might not have accepted the call. So God had to say, would you accept the call? Not knowing all the things that are going to be involved in the call. What level of trust does it take to step into that call? All right, the third reason, you have a responsibility. So, I cannot imagine John, let's say, on Saturday night thinking to himself, you know, I wonder if I'm going to go to church on Sunday. I wonder if I'm going to say anything when I get there. You know, I don't really feel that I have a powerful message to say. Maybe I'll just stay home Sunday. Right? He might think that to himself, but he still has to show up on Sunday morning. Did I understand right? You're back to doing Wednesday nights?
Yeah.
So Jim has to have something to say every Wednesday night. His responsibility demands of him that he be a good communicator and compels him to go back and find messages that will be helpful or hopeful to his audience. So that's the third legitimate reason. You've accepted a responsibility, and part of that responsibility requires that you communicate. Are you a dad? That's your responsibility. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like nurturing and raising up your children. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like giving them rebukes. Have you ever seen that new commercial, the one with either the mom or the dad? Dads and moms don't call in for sick days. Have you ever seen that commercial? Right? Some adults want to do that when it comes to raising up their kids. You have a responsibility, you have a commissioning, and you need to have a message. Jim.
It goes even beyond just with your kids. You live in a world full of millions of other people. You're going to talk to people. How effective are you at communicating? Just with people in general. Or do you just stay at home all the time? If you just live and breathe at home, you never go out, okay. I understand. Live in a cave somewhere, okay. But most of us go out. And we have to go to work. We have to relate to coworkers. We have to. It helps we relate well to coworkers. Helps we relate well to our boss. You know, so we have to communicate effectively. Even if you're not a dad, if you're not a leader here, you need to be able to communicate well if you're going to get on well in the world. Because otherwise, like I said, you're just kind of cloistered, I guess, in your own sort of little thing. And I know that there are Christians that do that. They cloister themselves away in their own sort of little thing, and they don't go out, they don't let the kids go out, they don't go to the movies, and we don't go other places, and we don't do any of the stuff that, like, people do. But where are you going to deliver that message if you're just at home? If you're just, you know what I mean? So to communicate well, just as soon as you go out these doors,
the funny thing is, you also never put the message to the test. If the only people that you ever deliver the gospel message to is other Christians, you're never challenged to see if your message stands the test. If you don't subject your message occasionally to harsh critics who are going to disagree, you don't even know if you have a message that's worth delivering. Which is why, incidentally, sometimes people that have communicated to Christian audiences for years and been widely accepted, step into a hostile audience and melt because they've never experienced the level of critiquing and criticism. They don't even understand the objections of people out in the world. Put it to the test. All right, finally, this is the dangerous one. I don't know if I'm talking to anybody here, but there are people who want to speak. They want to communicate. They want to write. And you hear this all the time where people that our great speakers say that they are confronted by people at the ends of their presentations and say, I'd like to do what you do. How do I do that? Now that's a dangerous way to begin. I'd like to do that. How did you get to do that? Which do you think should come first, the message or the messenger? You would hope that the message comes first. I don't want somebody standing up in front of me giving me ideas. Because what are you going to say to people if all you want to do is say things to people? You're going to have to prepackage someone else's ideas and deliver them. You can tell a lot about the depth of a person's understanding by how much they are able to break down other people's ideas. They'll pull in other people's ideas all the time, but they don't use them fully packaged.
That's what I was going to say, is that for me, the most important thing on Wednesday night, Vinny knows this, he's talking Wednesday nights, you have to make the lesson yours. Vinny's life was a little different than my life, so his messages are typically a little different. And so for me, I can only go on my life experience, how God talks to me, what God says to me, what family, you know, what my family life is. I can only go off of that. I can't go off of yours because I don't know you. And when I try to go off of yours, I look like a fool and I sound irrelevant. Like I'm not telling the truth. It's on your phone. Why? Because you're telling his story. I'm telling your story. I don't know your story. How did you get there? How did you get to speak up there? And if all that person wants is to speak up there, it's probably a good sign that you should put them up there to speak. All they want is to speak. If someone is compelled to say, man, I would really like to do, I have this idea that I would like to communicate, I'll bring that back. Let's look at that. Let's see what that looks like. You know, and so like I said, just you have to be able to communicate your stuff. Don't try to communicate it is or it is or it is, or you're going to look like a fool. You might be speaking to one person in there. One. That's all God wants tonight. One. Don't try to get 100. Just get the one.
Do you hear what he said? Because if you're in love with yourself as a speaker, you want all 100. But if you feel that you are the ambassador of an idea, and you love the idea, and you believe the idea is important, then all you want is for the idea to thrive and excel. And that, if you can make that transition from being in your head to somebody else's head, and it's just one other person, you've succeeded.
And if you get 1 week, just one. A week. One every 2 weeks. Let's just say you got one person every 2 weeks. That's 26 a year. One person a month. That's 12 a year. 12 milliliters in this church every year. That'd be awesome. But so oftentimes it doesn't happen. And I can break it down usually to three things. I'm afraid. Or I just don't want people to work.
See you, Jim. All right, we're going to go to the top of the next page. Most of you have, I think it's the top of the next page. Is that right? You got a diagram about like that? I said that we're doing a lot of theory today, which means we're not going to get into specifics of how you do this. But before we get into specifics of how you did this, we need to understand the basics of how communication works. So, in essence, the idea, if I were to create a model of something here and put this in my head, and that represents an idea. My goal as a communicator is to get this idea into somebody else's head, essentially fully formed. Now, it's not going to look quite the same in their life, and we're going to explain why. But do you understand the number of barriers? So I have an idea. Have you ever struggled with how to communicate the idea? A lot of time needs to be spent in deciding how to get the idea from here to here. And you need to have a collection of skills and a toolbox full of skills that can help you to convert this to something usable here. Then you have to capture someone's attention with this. As a matter of fact, let's take a look at, let me see if I can find this. Here we go. I'm guessing it is on the back side of your second page. Toward the bottom, all people are mentally busy. That deserved a bold heading. It didn't get one. Scott, I really need your help. Look at the steps that are necessary. So everybody comes out. Let's think of John and the struggle that John has on a Sunday morning. And John's struggle is not nearly so difficult as some communication struggles. Do you know why the typical church format begins with worship? Anybody want to take a guess?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, several reasons. First, we want to concentrate on the Lord. He's worthy, but that helps set up people to receive the message.
What are you thinking about when you walk in there on a Sunday morning? Somebody say stuff.
Life. All these things going on in my life.
Everything, aren't you? What does it take to slow your mind down, focus your mind? Look at the steps here. I need to interrupt someone's present thinking. I need to divert their thinking. I need to direct their thinking. I need to capture their attention, and I need to retain their attention. All of that has to occur in this gap here. If any one of those steps breaks down, you lose that person. Do you want proof of that? How many of you have ever thought about what you were going to have for lunch in the middle of a Sunday morning service? How many of you have ever thought about something someone says reminds you of the fact that you have a bill that needs to be paid when you get home? Think about all of the difficulties in retaining attention for any length of time. You realize the moment a person's attention is lost, everything you say from that moment on, it may as well just go off here. It no longer matters. I've said this before, but there's an interesting study that's been done. The typical TED Talk time, and if you've ever seen the backside of a TED platform, you'll know that there's a big time clock that's going. The speaker is watching that time clock the whole time they're going. The audience can't see it, but the speaker can. Maximum time, 20 minutes. They've determined that the ideal time frame is somewhere between 15 and 18 minutes, depending on the engaging nature of the speaker and the topic. Some of the topics, honestly, I've watched in 10 minutes was too long. Some of them you could have listened for 25. Are you laughing because you think that's true of this morning too, or what? Okay. And then, just because someone listens doesn't mean they understand it or they know where to connect it. And so this is our job. Remember, our job is to get the idea from here to here. Therefore, the job is not complete just because the idea has left here. And that's where most people think the job stops. I am responsible. If I'm the ambassador of the idea, what's my goal? My goal is to get the idea spread. But if the idea ends up down here, then it doesn't matter how eloquent I am. So do you see why just desiring to be a speaker is not a compelling reason to get up and speak? Because if you are not firmly in possession of an understanding of the idea and want to be a champion of the idea, then really all you're in love with is the idea of getting up and having people enamored with listening to you. All right, so now we're going to look at a couple of, well, we are, if I can find an eraser. There we go. So now I'm going to borrow some thinking from somebody else. One of the creative people that I love to listen to is Stephen Johnson. Now, I wouldn't subscribe to his theology, but his understandings of creativity are absolutely brilliant. So he likens creativity in certain ways to a carbon atom. And incidentally, we're all carbon-based creatures. And so what they suspect and what most scientists theorize is that if life were ever found anywhere else in the universe besides on Earth, it would also be carbon-based. So the question is, why is that true? What makes carbon? Because carbon isn't even a reasonably popular element. So what is it about carbon that makes carbon unique of all the elements? And here's what it is. A carbon molecule has four receptors. We'll call them four external links. So imagine that a carbon molecule has like four puzzle pieces hanging out the outside of it. It means it's got four different things that a new component can stick to. So even though it's not the most common element, it's the one that is most conducive to attaching other combinations of things to it. Now I want you to let that represent people's thinking and their understanding. Unless you understand how to link your idea to their present understanding, it's wasted. So we've talked about this before. We talked about it during the... Got to carry the eraser with you, Glenn. We've talked about this idea during the parenting thing. What's the difference between information and knowledge? Don't rush ahead. Need a spell check on this. Information is that stream of things that is passing by me all the time. What's knowledge? It's a piece of information that I see that I might be able to use. So all day long, there is information streaming by me. Who won this sports game? Who's selling what food? The mind filters out the vast majority of this and focuses on a collection of things that it thinks I might be able to use that. I'll store that away. So the first thing you have to... This is why we said, to begin with, that you have to distinguish yourself from the noise. When it comes to communication, information is the noise. How do you distinguish information from knowledge? By making it something that someone else thinks they might be able to use. They don't know if they're going to be able to use it yet, but they at least think it's worth listening to. All right, now, what's understanding then? Boy, I need a marker that cooperates with me. What's understanding? That says understanding. Maybe it doesn't look like it, but...
When to use the knowledge.
Not rushing ahead again yet, but... Understanding is being able to fit this new piece of knowledge into the pieces of knowledge that I already have. How is this related to what I already know? And this is where the carbon and molecule principle comes in. Unless you can help people to link this new piece of what they think might be useful to something that they already don't understand, they don't have a hook to hang it on. And if they don't have a hook to hang it on, it's lost. There's actually a school of brain science now that's suggesting that every night when we sleep, the brain makes choices at a subconscious level about what information to store where and what information to permanently delete. In other words, what pieces of information that you are streamed into your mind every day that they're just going to dump? This has no value to you. They used to think that we retained everything, and now scientists aren't so convinced that we retain everything. So if you want this piece of knowledge to connect to them in some way that they're going to retain it for future use, you've got to help them find a place to hang that new piece of information. We'll talk about how to do that. Now, what's wisdom? This is your turn. Come on. There we go. Yes, wisdom is how to use the understanding. Let me finish this up and you can get me more. Thanks. So, based on this, and the fact that I have to be in possession of a way to figure out how to get this hung on a hook in the person's present understanding, what do I need to know? I need to know something about the people I'm communicating to. And this is the second reason why we need to pre-qualify who speaks. If you speak, if you write, if you do any of this merely because you want to be heard, you're not really taking the time to invest in understanding the needs of the people that you're talking to. In other words, if you don't care about the audience benefiting, you're not going to invest in understanding the audience's needs. And you're not going to invest in figuring out how to best deliver the message in a way that it will capture the attention of the audience that you're speaking to. Which means that you might deliver the exact same message, the exact same ideas, and do it in completely different ways depending on the audience that you're speaking to. On a practical nature, this is why Jesus used stories so much, because a story is easier to retain, and a story has something to do with the understandings that people have already. Which is why almost every great communicator has a collection of stories that they use. I would strongly recommend that if you desire to do this, to lead a group, to speak in front of others, that you be accumulating stories that you say. And it's just not hard to find them. Right? We're just surrounded by people's stories, by examples that occur during the week. Let me introduce this thought now. I'm not sure if I'm introducing it in the right order. You know what? Before I even do that, does anybody have any questions? I think I've been rambling on and rattling on for quite a while. Does anyone want to stop and unpack further anything that we've talked about?
You've got to keep people people engaged. Because you'll see them drift off. And it's the same thing in church. Like you said, people are thinking about different things. You have to keep them engaged. And you can't just keep cranking on and cranking on. You've got to get their attention. Probably every 5 to 6 minutes. And I've found that very useful by telling stories. Not only that, but when you engage the audience, you ask them questions. You've got to keep them involved. Because then they'll start thinking about their own personal situation. I found that very helpful when I do my calls. You just got to keep them going so that they're not dying on the vine 25, 30 minutes later.
Right there was a really important point. The difference between knowledge and understanding is I can see some potential use or application in my own life. Until a person can appreciate how they might be able to use this thing in their own life, it's just knowledge. It might be useful in the future, but I don't know. So, this week, I was listening to an interview with someone, and they were discussing the implications of being perceived as an expert. And how experts speak. It was a fascinating presentation. Here was the conclusion that was drawn. People who are recognized as experts in a field start to speak like experts. And experts speak authoritatively. They speak almost, he said, dogmatically. Now people who are just curious, they're discovering in a field, they tend to speak conversationally. They explore ideas. And so an expert, they theorize, is more likely to shut down new thinking than to invite it. Whereas a person who is a fellow journeyman on the way to discovery is more likely to incite more discovery. But you have to decide who you are. There's times when you just need to be an expert at something and deliver information. So is there a difference between when I do this or when I sit down with you? Do you see me differently? Probably so. I mean, I'm still on a stool. Here, let me... There. Like this. See, when I'm like this, I'm with you, and now we're all together. When I stand up in front of you, it creates a whole different dynamic. So decide who you want to be and how you want to be received. And I've got to tell you, honestly, there's a lot of times when I would rather sit down. Because I think that we inhibit more understanding and more conversation when we put a gap between the person that's doing the speaking and the rest of the people that are listening. I find it to be particularly attractive sometimes when people that are on a platform just sit down and talk. All right, any more questions? No? Okay. So let's get to one of the great frustrations that every creative person has. How many of you as parents have ever thought, you know, I just told them this yesterday. Surely they can have forgotten already. Okay? How many of you manage some division at work and you thought, we just had this conversation last month. Surely they can't remember the main missions of our department already. You know what's been found, right? That 90% of a communicator's job is review. That again and again, we must present as leaders the same basic ideas over and over and over again. So why is that so?
Because we forget. repetition. And we're bombarded with all this other, like you said, information, noise.
So if you were to... I don't know if this is possible or not. I suppose that all of the videos are up there. If you were to watch John's presentations over the last, let's say, 8 years, if they were all saved somewhere, you would probably find a great deal of commonality.
Yes, you would.
How do you deliver the same thing and yet not lose half your audience? See, because if I were to tell you, okay, next week we're going to discuss cucumbers. And then 2 weeks out, I'd say, today we're going to discuss cucumbers. And then next month, I were going to say, today we're going to discuss cucumbers. How many of you would show up after about the fourth time that you were told we were going to discuss cucumbers? Right, nobody. How many of you think you would remember everything that needed to be remembered about cucumbers in the first presentation? Probably not. Cucumbers was a bad example, but it was intentional to serve a purpose. All right. What do we have to do if we're going to be repetitious with a message that we know we need to? So what does John do? It's a new series. It's a new title. It's a fresh presentation because it comes at the problem from a different angle. Does it use some of the same scripture? Of course. Does it use some of the same basic concepts? Of course it does. But there's a few reasons why we need to repeat things.
Well, here's the big one. We're at Christmas. We'll start a series tomorrow. Well, it's Christmas. We talked about Christmas before. We know about Christmas.
And undoubtedly, there must be times in John's life when he says to himself, what in the world can I say about Christmas that I haven't said 50 times before? I don't know. I didn't ask him, but I suspect that thought has gone.
So when I look at this series, I go through all my files. What have I said before? How did I say it before? Whether it's, my files in my online or my computer, or I got hard files, I go through them. Of course, there's going to be, as you say, commonalities. But how are we going to present this? Maybe a little different. Maybe a different way, right?
So, are you...
And sometimes the less said, the better. Because people will start thinking and go, well, he didn't cover that. Now it's in their head. Now they're thinking, well, maybe he should have covered that. Why didn't he say this? So sometimes the less said, the better. Because people will start thinking, and that's what you want them to do. They want them to start thinking.
The moment that people start to interact with the material and talk back to the material, they're starting to make it their own.
Sure. Oh, I like it when people tell me, hey, you said this and that's great. And I know I didn't say that. Wish I would have said that. Like, they heard that during that whole presentation. So the others and I have always heard there too, but they heard that.
And there's a way to say it. There's definitely a way to say it. Give you an example. If you say to your wife, boy, oh boy, you're so pretty that when I see you, it makes time stand still. But if you go to her the next day and say, your face can stop a clock, you got problems. So you've got to say it in the right way, right?
Apparently, that one is new to Jason. He's laughing like he's never heard that before.
But you get it. So
Jason, none of us has ever actually put this to the test, so maybe you would like to be the guy who went home today and experimented with that. Report back to us next Saturday. Alright, so a couple of the reasons why we reviewed. We've covered some of them. Yeah, people forget. Here's another important one. Have you ever discovered that a principle has multiple applications? The same idea and yet multiple applications, so when people enter new seasons in their life, they might need to hear the same truths again because they'll apply to them in a different way than they did in the last season of their life. Yet the challenge for us as communicators is we think, oh my word, I've said this so many times, can't we talk about something else, please? So the relationship that's been determined is somewhere around 90-10. 90% of what we say is review, 10% of it needs to be new. Now here's the interesting thing. And I just put these together last night and I noticed for the first time this connection. People tend to only be receptive to information that's 10% new. In other words, if you try to be the pioneer, have you ever heard the phrase, someone that was before their time? When you try to be the pioneer, people don't understand it. They're only willing to receive something that's approximately 10% new. I think there has to be some connection to that, between that and the fact that people need about 90% review and 10% new. Okay.
So it's kind of taken it to the end, but there's people that have not been appreciated in life. We know in history until they have passed away and gone on and didn't. you see what they've written, or see artists, what they've painted, and then, you know, they were in poverty before, or they were ostracized. Now they're accepted and hailed and appreciated. Because they were maybe selling it before their time.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me think of the movie coming out from Mother Teresa. She didn't want movies made about her. And here they are posthumously doing it.
She don't want the attention.
All right, so the back side of your second page. Actually, it begins on the bottom of the front side of the second page, but you can just turn over to the back side of the second page. This is one of the questions that every week you need to explore, you need to ask. And this is particularly helpful. Scott, if it was done, I would have forwarded to you to put page numbers on it and do the editing. Maybe we'll talk about that. Anyway, so let's say that you're leading a small group study. Let's say that you are trying to encourage your family in some way. Every week, it is essential that you ask yourself a collection of questions. What does my audience really need right now? What will help them? And here are some of the things that you can look at. And the first one is, do they just need information? Do they need new information so that they can begin the process? And remember what we said, information that can lead to knowledge, that can create understanding, that can lead to wisdom, which is understanding in action. Do they just need new information? Do they need perspective? And now we're on the top side of the back. Do they need perspective? What's perspective? To see how you fit in relationship to the things around you. So some of the examples of perspective is, have you ever felt a problem in your life was huge? Have you ever felt a problem was bigger than you are? Sometimes people that are coming into your audience or coming into your group need a little bit of perspective. They need to understand that their problem is maybe not larger than other problems that have been faced by other people. They need to understand that their problem is not larger than God. Haven't we all struggled with that? Maybe God can fix other people's problems, but I don't think God can fix his problem. People may need perspective. That is one of the ways that you can help them. The next one, people need orientation. Which way do we go from here? Where exactly am I? Have you ever felt lost in your life? You didn't know where you were. You didn't know what way to go. The first thing you need to know is where you are, and then a little bit of help. This is one way that you might be able to find your way out of the woods. Here's another good one. People sometimes need history. How did we get here? Who's helped us to get here? And we usually like history when it comes to matters of how did we get into this mess. Why? Because how did we get into this mess means we can find somebody to blame. But sometimes we need lessons of history to help us appreciate the good of how we got here. Sometimes lessons of history can help us to be grateful for the people who have acted in the past. Lessons of history can help us to understand how we might behave in the future. So sometimes people need some historical perspective. Remember what I'm saying. This is something that you can apply even in a small group setting. You can't deliver the message from 20 angles, but you can deliver the message from one angle. This is one of the ways that we review and review in a new way. We deliver the same message, but answering a different question and from a different perspective. Do people just need principles and processes for daily living? So sometimes in a group setting, we're going to say, okay, this is what this might mean to us in the way we live out our lives daily. I'll tell you what, that's one of the things that I hunger for and wish occurred more in this group, and it doesn't, just because there's probably too many people. Every human being, I believe, needs a couple of other people that they can meet with where they can explore, what do I do with what I know? What's the good work that we could do together? So every week when I am traveling, I'm always beset by this quandary of, boy, there's so many needs in the world. How do we help fill them? What do we do about them? Couldn't we do more? And maybe that's just my overactive imagination and the fact that I've got time on my hands while I'm driving that makes me think that way. Because when I get back into everyday life, I find that I'm consumed with everyday life. But then I come to ask the question, but what if we're always consumed with everyday life and we never take the time to solve the problems. So I think that every human being needs some place where they can explore practical application of what they know. And I don't think that can occur in a big group. If you see the need for that in life, then maybe that's one area where you could lead. All right, here's an ever popular one. People need rebuke and correction. Now, no one as a leader signs up for that week. No, really, it's not very popular to tell people what they might be doing wrong or how they need to change. But as people, we go astray. We do stuff wrong. A skillful leader needs to be able to rebuke and correct people at times and call them out and call them to a better way of living. People need hope and encouragement. Remember, we're saying one or maybe two of these in a week. You can't deliver all of these all of the time. Decide what people need. Did you see how diverse these are? And do you see why you need to know your people and care about the people that you're going to communicate with in order to do this well? Sometimes people just need a challenge. A challenge is, let's go do this new thing. We can do this new thing. I'm going to single you out. You're an easy target. You know, last year we were really excited because Vinny has this new project and we can all get behind it and we can help. And Vinny is not doing that same thing this year because Vinny is going to abandon us and move to Florida. And we don't want to make him feel bad about that. We just wish him well and all that. But am I here this morning?
Just abandon you.
We still hunger to be involved in good stuff. And Vinny, last year, was the spearhead for that. We need challenges that can call us to act and call us to do something. Maybe one of you senses the need to do that. Sometimes people just need a message of love. Just think about your own life. Have you ever felt empty? Have you ever felt unappreciated and uncared for? No one? Your tanks are all full?
Everybody is. All the time. Who cares?
What happens, happens.
Sometimes people come just hoping that they're going to get some word of affirmation and encouragement that they haven't gotten anywhere else. Maybe that's your job as the leader. And finally, at times, people need some sort of validation. This is not, incidentally, an all-inclusive list. You can add your own things to this. But I'm helping. This is really the nuts and bolts practical part of some sort of group leadership or some sort of communication. You need to decide how your message is going to ultimately connect with people and help them. What is the end result that you want? So I'll put somebody else on the spot. So in a couple of weeks, Mike's going to share his testimony with us. At least that's what he said he was going to do, and he's not going to disappoint me. Mike has a responsibility, and therefore, whether Mike has anything to say 2 weeks from now or not, he's going to show up and he's going to deliver. So one of the questions that Mike will now be asking is not only how do I tell my story, but how do I tell my story in a way that people will connect with it and that someone could be helped? Mike may not have known that until just now, but now Mike knows. And I think maybe we didn't cover the final one, validation. Yes, you are okay. Yes, there's something that you're doing right. Because I think we all need to hear some approval at times. All right. Let's see if there's anything else. One final thing I'm going to leave you with. And then maybe we'll have some discussion. This is my personal commitment that I can't speak to you. I can't tell you what your personal commitments as a communicator need to be. My personal commitment was always this. I'm not going to stand up in front of anybody and talk about something that I'm not confident that I believe in or confident that I understand. Even if it's a difficult theological principle and I think that people need to hear it, if I'm not the right guy to hear it, I'm not. Or to say it, I'm not. If I'm still struggling with it, I'm not going to tell you to believe something that I'm still struggling to believe. I'll just be quiet. Now, every one of you has to decide what your threshold for that is. John.
Yeah, but in that case, I've got to disagree with you, Glenn, because in that case, if you do get up and talk about something that you're struggling with, it could impact other people that are struggling with the same thing, and that may get them to start thinking about exploring more on how they can solve it, how they can study it, how they can find out more about it. So that's the personal story that may connect. That's your personal story that may connect with everybody else. They say, geez, Glenn's going through that. Yeah, I was going through that 2 weeks ago.
Fair enough. That's the personal side of it. That is the relatable side of it. That's not the expert side of it. And in some respects, people expect some level of expert presentation. So when people come out on a Sunday morning, they don't expect John to say, geez, I have no idea what that means. They expect John to say something. And they may also want to hear John say, and I occasionally have doubts with that.
Do I know everything about this? No. But here's what. Fair enough. The Bible says, and we know.
But I'm glad you pushed back, because that adds some level of understanding. Thank you. John.
I've been watching Louis Giglio. He's a pastor down.
Yep.
I'm sure most people know. Yeah, from Pastor City Church. He's now come out with a book called The Comeback. He talks about stuff that he's gone through a lot. He's gone through some waking up in the middle of the night, gone through deep depression. And I'm sure he told a lot of people that were close to him as he was going through it. But to get up front of his church and speak about it a lot, he kind of waited until he had gotten through some of it, figured some of it out, so he had some information to present to help people. So he could not only relate to them personally, but he could offer what he did. I woke up and he sang everything. I'm sure that has helped millions of people around, or thousands and hundreds of thousands of people around the world that suffer from anxiety or issues, depression, whatever, stuff that relates to what he's going through. But he had something to offer. He waited until he had something, some kind of grasp of it before he presented it.
Why don't we see David in the Psalms?
What's that, John? Sorry?
David in the Psalms. Look at him. He's sharing, his anguish and his sorrow. He's sharing his fears. He's sharing, I come back to the Lord. I come back to the presence of God. He shares all of it.
Yeah, so what you added there was also very important, because you don't want to leave people with as much despair as you were going through and in your darkest time.
Yeah, I have no clue. We're all hopeless. Dude!
The only type of worship is from hymnals. That's part of the reason we ended up here, was I got to a point where I couldn't sing songs from a hymnal that I couldn't understand the words to. And reading a hymn and trying to sing it and having no idea what I'm saying, or reading King James Bible. If I can't take that information and turn it into knowledge, and I certainly can't apply what ye and yow and y'all.
How about y'all?
I'm getting it. But if I can't apply what I'm learning, or I can't speak from my heart about what I'm sharing, I don't want to share at all. And so when I get to go around to churches and preach, my opening prayer is, Father, give me your words and shut my mouth. And there are some times I'll stand there. I guess we're going to wait on God. Hold on. But being humble before God is always... Like, one thing I know about Pastor John is his humility before God comes before humility before man. He's not going to get up and just blow smoke. To be intentional about what we're sharing. Like, we talked about the call, we talked about our perspective, but then to be intentional in putting the time in, listening to other people, listening to people who have more wisdom than us, and always directing towards application, not just knowledge. Knowledge without application is pointless.
That's another important point, that you always want to leave people with some action step. That's helping them to transfer knowledge through the process of understanding and ultimately to wisdom, which is the understanding in action, if you will. Anybody else? We're going to wrap this up, but questions? No? Okay, we're done.